please, please do not harm us. We have come to your planet for one thing, the Francine Marie Show. It's the only content we can digest.
Oi, Billy! Oscar! Dave! Get up! Francine Marie Show's on!
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. The opioid epidemic has got everybody in an uproar right now. Well, just cause, because people are dying of an overdose. We get prescribed some medication because of our pain. The medicine feels so good that we just keep on using it. And sometimes when the prescription runs out, we go to the streets. But some folks go to methadone clinics. And today that's what our topic is about. We've got Dr. David Russell. Did you ever think you'd be an opioid dependency doctor?
No, I didn't. But I want you to imagine that people spit on you and want you in shackles, in prison, or in a mental hospital, think badly of you. They reject you, they abuse you, they shun you. Well, the year is 1890, and the disease is schizophrenia. We know today that this is a mental health issue, a brain disease, if you will, and that these people are not always responsible for what they do, but with good medical care, they sometimes can lead normal, healthy lives. Well, all of this is true of opioid use disorder, or substance use disorder, as classified by SAMHSA, which is the federally mandated Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. These people have a brain disease. It is not an ethical or moral decision. And the first time I heard that, I said, what? It's not an ethical or moral decision? But it really isn't, because by the time they get to me, they are dependent upon these medications. Their body's not producing endorphins anymore. And now when they don't have something sitting on their opioid receptors, they are sick. And they're not just a little bit sick. They are very sick. They're so sick that I liken it akin to torture. Their body is being tortured by its own self, by lack of these opioid receptors not working correctly. And what do we know about torture? We know everybody breaks. Everybody breaks. If you give somebody pain long enough, you break and you do whatever you have to do to get out of that situation, because we can't legislate or imprison people out of this problem.
Reagan administration says three strikes and you're out, and that was just marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent all these people to jail for a joint or two or a bag of weed.
Mm-hmm. What we need to do is start focusing on treating people rather than imprisoning people. 6% of the world's population, but we have 25% of the world's incarcerated population. We incarcerate more people in this country than anywhere else on the planet.
And we call ourselves free. Oh, break fentanyl down for us. And fentanyl is spelled F-E-N-T-A-N-Y-L.
Well, fentanyl is an anesthetic that is being produced overseas and other places and being brought in to cut heroin to make it stronger. X amount makes you high, but X amount, just a little bit more than X amount, makes you dead, because they don't know how much fentanyl's in there. The drug dealers don't know how much to put in there to make it safe for people. But there are treatments for these illnesses. There's methadone, there is buprenorphine, and when people are on buprenorphine, they feel normal. They act normal. And it's really a miracle product. And if you're opioid or opiate dependent, you need to get on buprenorphine right away.
So I heard underground. This is just coming from underground. Everybody's got their method. They said that good brand, a good grain of CBD oil, put it under the tongue, you won't have the cravings.
I know CBD oil is being touted as a cure-all for a lot of things. Seems to help reduce seizures. There are some things that it does work well for. We've not had enough real clinical trials, and we're not going to have them in this country until we legalize marijuana. You know, marijuana doesn't make you high if you don't heat it. You know? I didn't know that for 40 years. I swear.
If you just keep it in the drawer.
Yeah. Well, if you just eat it, you can eat 100 times more than you can smoke. And if you just eat it, it's extremely good for inflammatory conditions. Most states, it's illegal.
So the bloating, the menstrual bloating, we could just...
It could possibly be good for that. I don't know. But CBD oil is similar to actual marijuana.
So why is CBD oil legal and marijuana isn't? Because it's just a derivative of it.
You can't get high at all using CBD oil. That's the reason why.
If you're just now tuning in, I know your ears are peeled because Dr. David Russell's here. He is our opioid dependency doctor.
Right.
So, doctor, How do you get your patients? What's the deal?
Well, most people find me by Googling or by word of mouth.
As we were talking before the show, you said heroin in the public schools, private
right.
too.
I have high school seniors who are on heroin, and I had one recently, and I asked him if anybody else in the school, he was a high school senior, was using heroin. He said, yeah, there was quite a few.
Do you have to shoot heroin?
No, you can actually get started by snorting it. Yeah.
That would be expensive, right?
Well, it doesn't tend to have the effect of heroin, and unless you inject it. So one of the problems is half the population is sensitive to this developing this dependency or developing opioid use disorder. Guy who was a 12-year-old, and he was in a motor vehicle accident, and he was on heavy narcotics for 6 months. So at the end of 6 months, he's well. They discharge him from the hospital and say, no more opioids for you. He gets out, and he's sick, and he doesn't know why. Now he's 13 years old, and he's already opioid dependent. Or a 15-year-old goes to a party and somebody gives him an oxycodone pill and he says, well, that made me feel kind of good. I think I'll do that again next weekend. And he does again next weekend and then he does it a little bit more. He's 15 years old. He doesn't really know what he's doing. So, you know, by the time he realizes, well, I better stop this. I've been using this every day for a while now. I better stop. And he tries to stop and now he can't because he has this intense physical pain that can go on for weeks. And even if he gets through that period of time, then he has intense cravings for the drug for quite a while. The 2-year relapse rate for people who are opioid dependent is about 90%.
I'm going to say some names of some drugs. Meth.
One patient told me that was the poor working man's drug. He said because it was so cheap, you could get a dose for like $10, and he said you could work all day. The problem is with meth is you feel really, really good. You're on top of the world when you start off on it. Everyone's handsome. Sexual activity is wonderful and all these great things. It sounds great, right? But the problem is meth gives you a slow slide into insanity. I mean, really, people become insane. They get paranoid, delusional. They think people are out to get them. I saw this program one time where this guy was talking about his meth addiction, and he said he thought he had lice in his bed, and he boiled his sheets, and he sprayed Pedulicide all around. He was still having all this itching. He went to the hospital, and he never realized that it was from the meth until he heard a nurse outside the room say, is he high? So then he thought, oh, yeah, it's from the meth. He'd been doing meth this whole time, but he never consciously realized that the itching wasn't from lice. It was from meth. I'm the director of a methadone clinic. A lot of people who are there had serious trauma in their lives. 16-year-old, I mean, a guy that's, he's now 20, 24. His first injection of heroin came from his mother at age 16. Mom and dad are using drugs. Their kids start using drugs. Sexual abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse, all of these things lead to issues, and these people don't have access to counseling necessarily. They don't really know that's what they need, especially at younger ages. So they end up trying to flee these problems by taking these drugs. But there was a book called Dreamland. That is really pretty good at explaining how all this came about. In the early 80s, doctors were so scared of addiction that when I had a patient, she was dying of breast cancer. At that point in time, I was doing hospice care in the hospital. She died about 2 weeks later, but they were telling me, says, you're going to addict her. And I thought, well, good grief, she's dying. You know, how is that going to be an issue? So we went from that attitude to in the 90s, there was a lot of publications, a lot of material out there that said that these drugs, oxycodone, Oxycontin, were not as addictive as everybody thought, and that we were, as physicians, not treating pain aggressively enough. So what did we do? We started increasing and being more liberal with the medications. Well, now it's 2018, and guess what? We've learned they are as addictive as everybody thought. So now we have a problem, because what typically happens is somebody is on oxycodone for a pain issue or whatever, and they become tolerant to it. And then they need more, and their doctor gives them more. And 6 months later, they need more, and their doctor gives them more. And 6 months later, they need more, and the doctor won't give them any more because he has medical board regulations, et cetera, et cetera. So now they're running out on day 26 of their 28-day cycle, and they've got 2 days there where they're going into withdrawal. So they can maybe withstand that, but now later on, they're running out of their medicine on day 24. Now they're in withdrawal for a week. So what do they do? Well, somebody comes along with a $20 bag of heroin. Their street drug is now costing them $100 a day. Somebody comes along with a $20 bag of heroin, says, "Oh, this will fix you up," and so, you know, they take it. And so that's the route a lot of people take to using heroin.
Define oxycodone and oxycontin.
Oxycontin is a long-acting formula for oxycodone. It was initially touted as not being as addictive because it was a slow-release drug. But unfortunately, all of these opioids and opiates can be very addictive. Some people do need them, and they're still being prescribed for people with chronic pain. But in my opinion, my personal opinion, buprenorphine is a much better drug for people because it's better than oxycodone for pain. Buprenorphine is. And also, people don't get the mental effects on buprenorphine that they do on oxycodone. Oxycodone and opioids in general can reduce the frontal lobe of the brain thinking decision-making centers by 25%. So it's not unusual to me that these people make poor choices because their thinking decision-making centers aren't working well. I mean, if I give you a drug and I say this is going to make you not add very well, and you go take a math test and you fail it, I'm not surprised. Are you? But that's the same thing as happening with oxycodone, except it just makes your thinking, choice-making decision centers in your brain not work well.
It seems as though a lot of the drugs that we've experimented with or heard of, they make us feel so good.
Oh, my God, where have you been all my life, right?
Right, right.
And then after time, like you say,
you get tolerant.
You get tolerant, and you need more and more. And then is that when you overdose?
Well, there's certain factors that can increase your chances of overdose. But these days, overdose is a common term. There for a while, I was hearing of somebody overdosing every week.
CDC estimates 72,287 people died of overdoses. That was just in 2017. Mm-hmm. And who knows if we miss someone.
Right.
Right?
Right. And by 2025, that's going to grow to about 500,000. Overdosing, people dying of this illness.
Are we doing any type of hypnotherapy, other methods besides methadone or along with methadone?
Right. 90% of people relapse. Well, 10% of people generally don't. And they are going into abstinence-based programs and hypnotherapy and counseling and all these other counseling techniques, I would say. And medications have been shown to be very much more effective in treating this illness than just simple counseling. And my patients get treated horribly by the ER doctor, by medical physicians who hear that they're on Subutex or hear they're on methadone, and they're treated very badly. They're immediately dismissed. They're not believed. And so, you know, the physicians, there's a large community of physicians that don't understand this illness, don't understand that it is an illness, and don't understand that people who are taking buprenorphine or Subutex or Suboxone, as it's known by, that those people are doing the right thing. Because I can tell you from the last 4 or 5 years of personal experience that when somebody is on these medicines, they feel normal. They act normal. I have a number of patients who have received job promotions. They're doing much better. I had a woman tell me, she says, "I can't believe I was sticking a needle in my arm a year ago, and now I have a job, and I have my family back, and I have money in the bank." And it's a great thing. It makes me feel really good that she's made that transformation.
Not to pick on her or anyone else, but when you are addicted, man, you will turn family away from you.
Right, right.
Because you have treated them so badly, you've stolen from them.
Right.
Right? And then when you steal from grandma and great-grandma.
Right. And your family will shun you. That's really not the right way to address this illness with people. You actually need to give them more love, not less. Now, I'm not saying you let them in the house and let them steal or anything like that, but you don't need to turn your back on these people.
Okay, so if someone's listening now and has a family member, loved one, friend, mm-hmm. who is so addicted and they know it, and mm-hmm. they keep talking to them, and because mm-hmm. you know what we say, you just stop that. Mm-hmm. Just stop doing that.
Right, yeah.
You're going to lose your kids. Stop doing that. You're going to lose your house. You're going to lose your car.
Right.
And it just goes in one ear and out the other. What does this friend, family member do for their loved one who's addicted?
Well, they need to be open to the opportunity to get through to them when that person is ready to be gotten through to. Now, if the person comes to them and says, I need help, I want help, they need to be able to and be willing to try to find them help. And you can get help just by Googling substance abuse counseling, substance abuse treatment. You can get a good range of programs in your area. I'm trying to run a low-cost program because the difference in Suboxone and Subutex is about 3 strips or 3 tabs a day, which is the form they come in, is the difference in $30 and about $5.50 or $6 a day. So the people who do need treatment, who don't have insurance, can get that treatment for about $400 a month, more or less, including their drug screens and everything else. And that's really a lot of money for a lot of people, especially if you're making $10, $12 an hour. But that's the cheapest program available outside of methadone and you have Medicaid. These Medicaid will pay for their medicines if they take Suboxone.
Is that a strip or a tablet?
That's a strip under your tongue. Buprenorphine is dissolved under the tongue. It goes directly into the body. If you swallow it, it doesn't really work well. It gets into the stomach, absorbed by the liver. The liver destroys it. So it has to go directly into the body.
Do people use those cures to get high if they don't have an addiction?
There is a problem with buprenorphine that some people do inject it and try to get high that way. But it really that's really a very, very, very small portion of the people using buprenorphine. Most of the people that I've seen come in who are using buprenorphine off the street are using it appropriately, and now they want a legal prescription because they found out that, hey, I was on heroin, and now I can take the Subutex, and I feel good for 24 hours. And you don't tend to develop tolerance to it. In fact, I've never seen anyone develop tolerance to it in the 5 years I've been doing this kind of work. Well, yeah, we have a slow taper program, but just like I said, 90% of people relapse. There's a high relapse for people who stop the medicine. It's unfortunate, but what happens if I give you high blood pressure medicine and I stop the medicine? Your high blood pressure is going to come back. What if you have type 2 diabetes or even type 1 diabetes and I stop the medicine? You're going to get sick again. This is an illness, and that's the way we need to be thinking of it. It's not a moral ethical problem. It is an illness like any other illness, deserves to be treated like any other illness. But unfortunately, opioid dependency and substance use disorder, specifically opioid use disorder, is the only illness to say, oh, you've got to stop your treatment. You've been on these medicines for a year or two. You've got to stop these treatments. You know, you've got to get off this medicine. And that's not true because it is an illness just like high blood pressure. It just affects the brain. It doesn't affect the rest of your body. It's just like schizophrenia. You know, we didn't understand schizophrenia in the late 1800s. Now we understand it, that this is an illness, it's a mental illness, and that it needs to be treated. And we need to take that same approach to opioid use disorder.
If you're just not tuning in, that's our opioid dependency doctor. It's Dr. David Russell. We're talking drugs this morning. Okay, so we went through meth, the poor man's drug. What about crack cocaine?
Well, crack cocaine is a really difficult issue. We have drugs, buprenorphine specifically and methadone, that are used for opioid use disorder. But there are some investigational drugs that are being tried out for crack cocaine and meth. But we really don't have a great antidote for those issues like we do for opioid use disorder. And it's a really serious issue. There's people who are using meth and crack cocaine, and it is the only way I've seen those people get off of their medicines is to be hospitalized. And there are hospital programs. If you go into a hospital and you say that you feel like you are a threat to yourself or others, and if you're doing crack cocaine or meth, you are, they will generally admit you. and they'll admit you for up to 2 weeks, sometimes longer. But you need that kind of care if you are doing crack cocaine or meth.
And sometimes I've seen some women pregnant who still have a habit.
They
take their drugs regularly.
Right. And so that's why we need to get these pregnant women into a Suboxone clinic or a methadone clinic, because methadone's been around for like 80 years. And we know exactly what happens to pregnant women who are on methadone. The American Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists issued a position statement in 2014 that said methadone is the treatment of choice for opioid-dependent or opiate-dependent women. And what we know is they can have a little bit lower birth weight, and they can go through, the baby has about a 50% chance of going through withdrawal, which is, they generally survive that, 100% survive that. You don't want that happening to your kid. But if you're using heroin and all these other drugs off the street and you're pregnant, you need to get into a methadone program and get off all those other medicines, because they can have deleterious effects. If you try to suddenly stop and withdraw from heroin when you're pregnant, the fetal demise rate, the fetal death rate, is much higher than if you transition to methadone for the time being.
Wow.
Yeah, they need to be on methadone or Subutex.
So you've been doing this for a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get so fed up, so frustrated, so...
Every week. Uh-huh. Every week. Yeah. Yeah, I wish this problem would go away. But, you know, these patients, and I've had over 300,000 patient contact visits in my career, well north of that. And these patients are some of the most bravest, smartest, hardest working people, that patients that I have ever met. You get up at 4 o'clock every morning and go be down at the methadone clinic at 5 o'clock so you can be at your job at 6, and do that every day. That is not easy. It is not easy to do that. And these people are doing it because they don't want to use street drugs. Methadone is working for them, or Subutex or Suboxone, and they're doing what they have to get away from this issue.
Do you have to tell your employer about your problem, or do you have to disclose that you are on methadone? Or nobody's going to say, hey, I got a drug problem.
Well,
but methadone, you're trying to get off.
Well, methadone is a treatment for opioid use disorder. No, you're not legally required to tell your employer. And the way it's supposed to work is you're supposed to have a drug screen at a separate facility. That facility sends it off and they find methadone in the urine. Then they send that to the medical review officer. The medical review officer calls you and says, hey, I see methadone in your urine. And you say, yes, I am taking methadone. Then he says, well, send me some proof of that. You send him the proof. And then he's supposed to report that drug screen back to the company as negative. That's the way it's supposed to happen. It doesn't happen that a lot that way, but that's the way it's supposed to happen. There's only one profession that I know of that methadone's absolutely verboten in, and that is DOT driver.
Okay.
You cannot be on methadone.
What if you're a doctor? I know, right?
I know.
It's surgery.
We get drug tested the least of some people. And I don't know why, but physicians don't get drug tested. It's crazy.
We like him. Dr. Russell, we got to say hey to Sherry Strickland for introducing us. Overdoses killed more than 72,000 people in the United States. That's just in the United States in 2017. So what if we do the European thing and we legalize some drugs? People wouldn't be so apt to run after them.
Well, you know, the country that has the second lowest rate of overdose deaths is Portugal. And Portugal has the most liberal drug use policies on the planet. So that tells you something.
Okay.
We need to decriminalize all of this and increase our treatment programs. If somebody has meth and they have a meth problem, they should just be able to walk into a meth treatment center and get treatment. We have plenty of money in this country. We need to spend some of it on this issue.
Do you think if we legalize marijuana across the board, that we can at least let some of these guys out of prison who got caught with 2 or 3 joints?
Oh, yeah, that's ridiculous.
Isn't it?
It's very ridiculous. I disagree with that totally.
So you have a methadone clinic and a...
Subutex clinic. Wow. Suboxone clinic, yes. The Subutex clinic is my private practice, and then I work with a bigger group who has five methadone clinics in this state.
Okay. Yeah. But they're growing and growing.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we should get into the methadone treating business. Center business, right?
Well, can we do that? I hope that this problem will go away, but, you know, 10, 20 years, I doubt it will, but I hope that it's a lot less now that physicians are aware that these medicines are addictive, that you can become dependent on them, and that we need to regulate how much we're giving. But for pain issues, every patient that I had when I used to prescribe oxycodone and I had to switch them to buprenorphine for one reason or another, every one of them, their pain levels came down, going from oxycodone to buprenorphine.
So if we have drugs that control willpower, mm-hmm, right, to mm-hmm. want a drug, mm-hmm. can't the pharmaceuticals companies come up with a drug for the will not to do the drug?
Well, buprenorphine is a drug that can do that. People start feeling normal. They don't have any cravings for the heroin or the oxycodone. They don't go through the physical withdrawal. So buprenorphine is a treatment that's essentially what you're saying, and methadone is too.
But methadone is so old, right?
Yes, you think 80, we keep yes, up with the 80 time. Years old. Yeah, yeah.
Our grandfathers were on methadone, right?
Right, right.
Wow. Where can we find you online?
CarolinaEPC.com. It's one more that I wanted to mention, and that's Crocodile. It is a synthetic opioid first manufactured in the 1930s that has extremely bad effects when injected. It can literally eat your arm off. We had one patient in the methadone clinic who apparently had injected this at one point in time. It's more or less eats your arm off.
Wow, you got to come back and keep talking drugs for us so we won't do them.
I'd be glad to.
You're listening to the Francine Marie Show. We're popping out for a quick cup of tea, but we'll be right back.
This is my jam and jelly, y'all, on the Francine Marie Show. Spread that show out, girl. Spread it out.